clinched first place in his division about 20 years ago, and he has never looked back. Bob McCowan, Primetime Sports. It's on. Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Here we go, another day, another 50 cents. It's prime time for a Thursday, the 23rd of May, hour number two of the radio program. On the Fan and Sportsnet, Bob McCown with John Shannon. Rob Becker will join us in a bit. Also, Christine Brennan of USA Today later this hour. In the next hour, Patrick Gillick, Hall of Famer. Glenn Healy, Hockey Night in Canada. David Branch, President of the CHL.
Wow.
All on the show tonight. You impressed by that?
It's a good list of people.
Thank you.
You did it all yourself, I sure.
Nothing to do with it.
Oh.
Just show up, do whatever I have to do. Babysit you.
Oh, man, Bob, that's not fair.
Change your diapers.
Yeah. The Sergio stuff is fascinating. I mean, you'd think that he'd be smarter than that.
No.
You don't like him, though, do you?
I like Sergio better than I like Tiger.
Really?
I like almost everybody.
This guy has made Tiger a sympathetic figure.
Yeah, that's the only thing that disappoints me. Look, there's no excuse for what he did. No excuse for what he said. I do believe we live in a world that is overly sensitive to this kind of stuff. But I accept that you can't say this kind of stuff in public without there being a backlash.
Well, you shouldn't really say it in private either, Bob.
Well, no, but if you say it in private, there's no backlash. If you say it in public, there's going to be a backlash. And so he gets what he deserves, whatever he gets.
Mm-hmm.
I think even Tiger, perhaps to his credit, or maybe it's just Tiger and his image conscious people at IMG directing him on this. Tiger sort of took the high road on it.
Well, I thought, made Tiger sound mature, understanding, and created some sympathy. It's something I never thought I'd ever say again.
Well, that's why I don't think Tiger did it. I think IMG guys did it. Because I don't think Tiger's any one of those things. There's no excusing it. We're going to talk about it with Christine Brennan. Here's what I will say. I think it's being blown way out of proportion on a place called like the Golf Channel, where they're so desperate for some sort of news of any sort because they have virtually none.
Well, between Sunday and Thursday, they have nothing.
There's virtually no news in golf anyway. They make it all up because there's nothing duller than golfers. There's nothing less interesting in athletics than golfers.
Not even bowlers?
Well, we don't know anything about bowlers. Nobody cares about bowling.
Yeah.
So, I mean, as a sport that has its own dedicated 24-hour channel.
Right.
I mean, there's really nothing tangible to talk about. I mean, the Golf Channel does a good job covering events.
Mm-hmm.
They do a good job in terms of, teaching, instruction. I don't know if they do that great a job on travel stuff. I think I've always thought they could do more showing me more golf courses,
yeah,
more things. I think they do a very weak job there. I think they're cheap, basically. But, you know,
maybe there's an opportunity to create some programming that way.
Perhaps. But they really latched onto this.
Oh, I know.
Like, I happened to be flipping the dial the other morning when... or maybe it was around noon, I guess, and Sergio held his news conference. They're over in England or wherever they are.
Right.
And I saw his news conference on there. And then they came back in with the panel discussion. And then I kept flipping back to it during the course of the day. And they were just going on and on and on. I mean, and it was the story. And I get it's a story. It's about golf. It has a little bit of controversy. They never get one of these. You know, they'll go 5 years and not have a story with this much meat on the bone. But I think they really overplayed it. They made more of it than needed to be made. And I'll stop there. Because you can't win in this argument, you know?
Well, to me, what they did with it is comparable to what seems to be happening a great deal on television is that once you get something, you just you hammer it home. What was the name of the girl that just finished the court case? The murderer stabbed her boyfriend 38 times and claimed she was innocent.
Yeah, I always forget the name of
it.
No, it just goes CNN
dedicated every waking hour to it for 2 months.
Oh, I know.
And there are other events and other things in that, but that somebody, there's a consultant somewhere in the broadcast world says you got to latch onto a story and you got to beat it till it's dead.
And, well, they sure did that.
Yeah.
With this. I mean, you got to remember it was 14 years ago. Can you look it up?
What, the Fuzzy Zeller line?
Fuzzy Zeller used virtually the identical reference.
Mm-hmm.
It was a fried chicken reference. And it related to the Masters.
Correct.
And what Fuzzy expected Tiger would serve at the Masters dinner
on the Tuesday night, right?
Right. 97, so 16 years ago. Well, 16 years ago, I dare say our sensitivities were a lot more heightened than they are today in terms of remarks that could influence any kind of racial repercussions.
Mm-hmm.
You'd like to think so. And yet this is being played, I think, every bit as big as Fuzzy Zeller 16 years later. An identical reference. Identical reference.
And it had a huge effect on Zeller's image for the rest of his playing career. A huge effect.
Yeah.
And
because Fuzzy, unlike Sergio, Fuzzy was among those beloved kind of guys.
Right.
He wasn't a great player. Good player.
He was a good old boy.
But people love Fuzzy.
Yeah.
Fuzzy was funny, mm-hmm. funnier than most golfers were, irreverent. And yet Fuzzy got drilled on that.
Well, as I said, I don't think his image ever recovered from it during his playing time.
Garcia, on the other hand, has always been a polarizing figure.
Correct.
Yeah. Fuzzy wasn't polarizing, but Garcia always has been a guy many people dislike, but some people love. And
not unlike Tiger, not unlike Mickelson. Like those three guys are polarizing people.
I would tend to agree.
Yeah.
And the truth is that Sergio's fan base, at least in North America, is probably significantly smaller than either of the other two guys. So there's probably more Sergio dislikers than there were likers. Nonetheless,
mm-hmm.
This was an opportunity to latch onto this story. I mean, it's a stupid thing. The context of it, and again, this is not me trying to make an excuse for it because
you can't win this one.
No, clearly there is no excuse for it.
No.
Having said that, I think context is important in all these. What do we think they were trying to do? What do they think they were trying to say? Sergio was asked at a dinner a question, and there was the question was posed as a laughter thing. They were trying to poke fun at the Sergio and Tiger thing that had happened at the TPC.
Correct.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And Sergio, I think clearly his intent was to try and be funny, and he chose the wrong words.
Correct.
Unequivocally, no question, no excuse, chose the wrong words. Shouldn't have said it. But was there significant malice? I'm not convinced of that. Now, how that mitigates the situation, everybody's got to decide for themselves.
Yeah.
In my mind, I don't particularly care for Sergio. I think Sergio is a mental lightweight. I think Sergio had more of a case than most people give him credit for at the TPC.
I think you have to put the whole thing at the TPC in context as well, because let's face it, this is the Hatfields and the McCoys.
Well, it is.
These are two people that, unless they're forced to play together.
Oh, they're never going to talk to each other. They don't like each other.
They're never going to be in the same room. They don't like each other. Bob, you have feuds with people. And,
sure.
And I have, people I don't like, I just avoid them. I avoid them with the plague.
Yeah, I just don't talk to them.
Yeah. Well, and that's really in many.
You have, in some cases, you have that option. In the PGA Tour, you don't always.
You don't
have
the option. And no, exacerbated. It gets exacerbated by everybody in and around the tournament that says, hey, there's Sergio and Tiger, and they hate each other.
But the thing that bothered me, you know, I understand the situation at TPC. Sergio's on one side of the fairway, and he's away, and Tiger's on the other side of the fairway in the trees, and Sergio is getting ready to hit, and Tiger pulls a club out of his bag to get ready to hit, and he pulls a wood out, which means he's going for the green. I think it was a par five or it was
a
long par
right.
four.
That's right.
And the crowd oohs. The crowd cheers or whatever. And Sergio kind of looks over and, you know, he finds out Tiger pulled a club out of his bag. And you, that's one of those things you don't do. You don't do it before another guy's going to hit.
That's the code.
That's the code. Tiger's response was, I couldn't see him. A PGA Tour official told me he'd already hit.
I think it was actually even worse than that. It was the marshal. And the marshals are told at these courses, don't talk to the players. You know, this, then that's all part of this whole fabrication.
But I'll tell you what bothered me about Tiger's response was, which has always bothered me about all of Tiger's responses to all the controversies he's gotten into. Wouldn't it have been easy for Tiger to say, look, the marshal told me he'd hit. I didn't know he hadn't hit. Look, I apologize. Yeah. I'm sorry, but I didn't know. Yeah. That's all he had to add, and he wouldn't do it. Tiger has never apologized to anybody for anything he's ever done in his life, because the world of Tiger only has Tiger in it. And that's the fundamental difference here. I'm not trying to make Sergio a sympathetic character here, but at least Sergio Garcia holds a news conference and falls on his sword, apologizes, says he called the IMG guy, didn't have Tiger's number, hopes to talk to Tiger, blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. Whether he does, I don't know.
Yeah.
And look, it's damage control. Don't get me wrong. I'm not naive. But at least he made an effort. 2 weeks before, Tiger made no effort.
Well, let's put it in context. Not only are we talking in dealing with Tiger in these situations, we're also talking about what he did at the Masters too, Bob. Where, in many ways, he claimed claiming ignorance on, I believe it was 15.
Oh, the drop.
The drop. Well, I mean, these guys know the rules of the games better than the marshals and better than the PGA Tour officials. They know the rules. He knew the rules, and he claimed ignorance. And so he's always casting blame. The first thing that I thought of at the TPC was he's blaming someone else for his mistake, just as he did at the Masters.
This is what he does all the time,
and
that's what drives me crazy.
Taking responsibility in those situations is something that. But he's Tiger right now. And right now he has taken the opportunity to create a sympathetic character over a situation.
Well, the one thing that probably will be a ripple effect of this will be that ultimately, whenever Tiger and Sergio are next competing in a tournament together, which I'm going to assume it could be the Memorial. I don't know if Sergio's playing in the Memorial. I assume Tiger almost always is because he wins it a lot. Certainly at the U.S. Open. But they will soon. They will be on the same golf course together.
Cross paths, yeah,
and this story's going to still be out there.
Yeah,
and will more people tune in to see if there's? And there won't be anything. Won't be any fireworks. There won't be any repercussion. Nothing's going to happen here. But people might tune in to see the train wreck.
Well, we know that more people tune in to watch Tiger. Period. I mean, the TPC was up 68%.
I get that, but I mean, because of this controversy.
I don't know about that.
I mean, the one thing, well, look at, how many times does a golf, do you get a story in the newspaper, anywhere in the newspaper, about golf that doesn't refer to what happened in a tournament?
Well, that's all.
Like a real life story.
Well, if you get.
Golf is void of real life stories.
If you get hit with a wedge by your wife.
That would do it?
Yeah.
How often has that happened?
Once.
That we know of.
That we know of. Yes.
Anyway.
That we know of.
So quickly, let's change gears here. We're going to talk more about it later on. Patrick Roy is the head coach of the Colorado Avalanche. The Avs tweeted it first and then confirmed it with a news release.
Good of them.
Which is sort of interesting. in and of itself. And I mean, look, it's not a fresh story. The story's been out there for a few weeks, possibly.
Yeah.
Certainly for the last couple of days.
Well, it's ever since his brother put it on his Facebook page.
Yeah, that would be probably the
giveaway.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and based on what we even saw yesterday with the Alain Vigneault stories coming well before any official announcement from the Canucks, and in fact coming before the actual conversation, according to Mike Gillis, that he had with Alain Vigneault at 5:15 Eastern Time, that he was no longer the coach of the Vancouver Canucks. I mean, the Avalanche did the right thing getting ahead of it.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah. And I mean, I hope they're doing it for the... They're doing it because he's a good coach.
For two reasons.
Well, he's...
No, that's...
Okay.
He's Patrick Roy.
Yeah.
And he's a hero in Denver.
Totally.
Maybe next to Elway. I'm trying to think of a basketball player that might qualify.
Well, the Iceman.
George Gervin.
Who was the assistant coach in, not the Iceman, I apologize. Who was the assistant coach for the Raptors that was the former Nugget?
Alex English.
Alex English. He's the greatest Nugget of all time.
I'm not sure that he would have the same stature. Elway certainly does.
Oh, yeah. Well, and but there was it. I'm not sure the Nuggets have ever had a player.
I mean, this guy's got to be in the top. It's certainly in the top five. If you're talking about Denver sports heroes.
Well, and I mean, but of the.
Maybe number one. So they bring a guy back.
Well, tied with the other two, maybe.
Bring a guy back who adds who brings them credibility.
Yeah.
Brings them, can sell tickets.
Passion.
That people can identify with, that they can hang their head and say, okay, everything's going to be all right now because Patrick is back. Right?
Yes.
Now, above and beyond that, the one thing I respect about Patrick Roy is he went, whatever his motivation was, he went and paid his dues. I don't know that he went and coached in Quebec with the ambition to someday be in the National Hockey League. I think he went there because he was part owner. He could make some money, which he did.
A lot of money.
And he could have basic autonomy with the hockey operation.
Yes.
He was a coach. He was a general manager. He was the president.
Yep.
Whatever he was.
Mm-hmm.
It was everything. So I think there was an ulterior motive there. He didn't sacrifice very much in order to do that.
No.
But nonetheless, he spent... 7 years?
Eight.
8 years?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
8 years?
Mm-hmm.
I respect that. I respect a guy who will take that. Well, didn't Vigneault do that? Didn't Vigneault take a step back after the Habs job and coach in the minors?
Oh, Alain actually took a few jobs, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, no, yeah.
But, I mean, this is a guy starting out, didn't expect. And, you know, there's a lot of athletes out there, former athletes, who want to be coaches. But they don't want to pay the price. They don't want to ride the buses.
Well, there's a lot.
A lot.
A lot that don't want to pay
the
price.
Give me the job.
Because they're rich in the first place. They're already rich. So if I don't get exactly what I want, I'm not going to do it.
I'm not going to do it.
Right.
Well, this guy, who was rich and famous, took this step. I respect it. I'm glad he's getting a shot. I hope he's successful at it.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree. The question will always be for me is, does his style... and his passion translate to the new NHL where, you know, the fire and brimstone guys, he's a fire and brimstone guy. That whole style seems to have faded away a lot. Now, the good thing is there's a nucleus of young players. He's worked with young players for a long time. And from that perspective, that I think that he has a roster full of stars, young stars, that this could be a very, very good time for someone of his ilk to go to Denver, make a difference, and reignite a franchise. Because that's what they really need to do. They need to reignite a franchise.
Well, and he's not walking into a situation where the expectations are going to be extraordinarily high immediately. So I think he's going to have a couple of years.
Yeah, you're probably right. You're right. And, I mean, it's whether... the relationship, the strong relationship between Sakic and Waugh, obviously was there when they were players. And it certainly didn't take Joe Sakic very long to know who he wanted as his head coach.
The interesting situation will be to observe if Patrick Waugh can break through and become really the first goaltender to have significant success as a coach. Because there have been some, not very many, but there have been goaltenders that have had head coaching jobs.
Yep.
Very few of them would be none, I don't think, would be counted among the great coaches in the National Hockey League in history. None.
Well, I'm trying to think off the top of my head. I guess the best former goaltender as a coach in the NHL would have been Emil Francis.
Yeah.
But there's enough of them, but they haven't progressed. I mean, they haven't really progressed.
But Emil Francis was gone by the 70s.
Yeah, 73. Yeah, no, I'm saying, but of recent times, I mean, Jerry
Last
Cheevers.
40, it's 40 years. Yeah, Jerry Cheevers.
Jerry Cheevers was a, Eddie Johnson.
EJ.
And Eddie was a very good coach. You know, there's, we
Ron
actually.
Ron Lowe got a shot.
Ron Lowe coached in both Edmonton and New York. We went through this list the other night, and there, it's not the fact that there aren't goalies that became coaches, it's how high on the pecking order they become.
Well, that and you know, by percentage, you have to understand there are two goaltenders on a team. There are 18 to 20 skaters.
Well, they all went into television. So all the goalies,
literally.
Yeah,
we're having another one on tonight.
Good. I think Branch was a goalie too, wasn't he?
I don't know that. Was he?
I don't know. We'll have to ask him.
Why did you suggest that?
I just looked at something told me that Branchy was.
Was a target.
Really? Maybe I'm wrong.
Probably. 22 minutes past the hour. Rob Becker joins us next. Primetime continues on The Fan and Sportsnet.
Blue Jays versus Orioles. Tonight at 7. Now, more of Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590. The Fan.
Here's Rob Becker from New York City. Hello, Becker. How are you doing?
Hey, how are you?
Good. A bunch of things to get to in a very short period of time. We've talked a lot about these college athletes and how they're not compensated for the use of their likeness on, among other things, video games, where right. schools make money. All kinds of people are making money off the backs of students who get nothing for it. So this Rutgers quarterback, or former Rutgers quarterback, files a lawsuit against EA Sports because his likeness was used in one of their games, and a judge rules in favor of EA.
Originally.
So where are we going with this thing?
So then, that's the district court ruled in favor of EA. But then he appealed it to the Third Circuit Court of Appeals, which is a court of appeals that's in charge of Pennsylvania, Delaware, New Jersey, and they reversed. They ruled in Ryan Hart's favor. And they ruled that, this was not a First Amendment issue, that his right of publicity trumped any First Amendment issues, and that basically the EA had to pay Ryan Hart to use his image. And what it came down to was, in this case, they were using, for the Rutgers team, they were using a quarterback who looked just like Ryan Hart and who had his number. It was basically supposed to be Ryan Hart.
Right.
And he said, you can't use me in a game, you know, you're violating my right of publicity if you haven't paid me. So they said, they originally argued, and it's actually, I'm kind of surprised they were even successful at the lower court, but they argued that we have the right under the First Amendment to put you in our game.
Let me stop you there for a second. Yeah. You're speaking to an audience in Canada who won't be familiar perhaps with the First Amendment to the Constitution right. of the United States, so take a second and tell me what the First Amendment says.
Well, it's a right of free speech, and it's just your basic right of free speech, and they said this is our right of free speech, and you can't stop us from doing this, said EA. And they also said there's this issue of when does the First Amendment, the right of free speech, apply? And there's this concept of transformative use. If you take something that's maybe just someone's persona just looks like them, and then you do something with it that transforms it into something else, then maybe that brings in the First Amendment. But the basic idea is if you just leave the image as it is, it's a person's image, and you don't do much with it, it has nothing to do with free speech, and he's just got a right of publicity. So what he then appealed after he lost, and he got the Court of Appeals, quite rightly, I think, to agree with him, and they said, look, you haven't done anything to transform this player's image. The EA had argued that because people playing the game, if they want, can alter how the quarterback looks. And so they said that was a transformative use. The court said, no, that's not a transformative use. They said the default setting is it looks just like Reinhardt. And if you change it, it doesn't look like him anymore. But whenever it looks like him, it just looks like him. You haven't transformed it. You haven't done anything to make it your own expression. You're just using an image of Reinhardt. And so it's just a basic violation of his right of publicity. And this is exactly the way the law should work, Bob, because and this is why people, you know, video game makers like EA are always going to, you know, assuming that this other courts agree with this court, and I think they will, if they're going to sell games like this, they're going to have to pay these players now for licenses. This is why this is very important. Because the whole point of a video game like this is to make it realistic, to make the players in the game look like the real players. Mm-hmm, that's right. Why people want to play it. And that very thing is the thing that takes the First Amendment right of free speech out of it,
exactly.
And obligates them to do, you know, to pay the player for his right of publicity. If they transformed it, if they made it different, then who would want to play it? It wouldn't be realistic. So that's why the very nature of what they're selling is going to force them to pay these athletes, a license fee to use their right of publicity. And so, in the end, you know, this law that we've talked about how this law is on, the laws have not been working right and they haven't been unjust. I think now you're going to see a sea change where all these companies are going to have to pay the players. They're going to realize it. And I think we're going to start to see just results here.
But, Rob, it appears to me that what happened with Rutgers and EA Sports seemed to happen a ton quicker than what Ed O'Bannon and his group have gone through. Is there
simpler? Yeah, go ahead.
No, I just wanted to know why. So you say it's simpler?
Yeah, I mean, they're just making it the intellectual property issue of right of publicity. They aren't bringing into it, you know, a lot of other issues relating to college sports in general. And at this point, he hasn't even turned it into a class yet. What's scary for EA and all these video game makers, really, is he's trying to represent all other players like him. And he hadn't until now, partly because he had lost in the district court. But now that the Court of Appeals says, you have a winning case,
right,
it's going to be a lot easier for him to represent a whole class of players.
Right.
But they're going to come into it basically knowing that they've won.
So,
you know, the only way they could lose is if the United States Supreme Court reversed, which I think is unlikely.
So Reinhardt, what does he, other than he gets the ruling, what does he get out of it? Does EA have to cease and desist distributing a game with his likeness in it? Is there a monetary punishment or attached to this? What's the next step here?
Well, the next step is, he has the power to have them enjoined, to have them stop from setting out the game. But that's not what's going to happen. What he'll do is he'll have a negotiation. He'll say,
right,
he'll have his lawyers talk to EA and say, look, you want to keep selling this game? You got to pay my client a certain amount of money that is, you know, a reasonable type of fee that people get in this situation for their rights of publicity. And then they sit there and negotiate. And if they can agree on a number, then they pay him and the game stays out there. If they can't agree, then yeah, he can get it enjoined. He can get the game taken off the racks because it violates his right of publicity. And so that's where we are. And, you know,
so
I think in the end, he gets money.
Does this ruling now apply to every other college athlete who is depicted on an EA Sports game?
Well, if any athlete who has a basis to sue in either New Jersey, Delaware, or Pennsylvania, and I think that, you know, EA, as I recall, is located down there. I think, you know, if the video game maker is there, or if you're an athlete who plays in one of those three states, you know, you can use this as a precedent, and you'll be successful. But if you were somebody who's in one of the other 47 states, and the company you're suing is in one of the other 47 states, then you've got to convince a new court of this. But I think you have a good chance of getting another court to say, you know what, this court is right, and we agree with it.
We only got a couple minutes, so let's take another subject here. One of the things that came up this week is the United States Golf Association and the RNA, and as my friends at Golf Canada like to say, in partnership with them, determined that anchored putters will no longer be allowed. An offshoot of this is that the PGA of America does not agree with this ruling, and we're still waiting to hear what the PGA Tour, which is a separate body, by the way, how they're going to respond to it. But one of the issues that has potentially been raised is an action, presumably by players, either individually or collectively, who have used anchored putters in the past against this ruling. Chances that they have a case.
I think it's very slim and virtually none, because basically courts allow sports to set their own rules of how the game is played. I'm not talking about labor relations, but just how the game itself is played. And that's basically left to individual sports organizations. And, you know, what would the case be? What would the suit be for? You can't say it's anti-competitive to the players, because the whole idea of saying, you know, antitrust and anti-competitive acts, well, that relates to economic deals, to economic regulations. This is somebody complaining about whether they can compete in a golf tournament, which has really got nothing to do with antitrust. You know, and there's been some issue raised about whether the companies that make these belly putters, whether they could sue on antitrust grounds, say, hey, you're not allowing us to compete. But again, they're not allowed to force a golf organization to take their putt. Like if the golf organization says this is how the game's played and we don't have these sort of putters, then they just simply aren't making the right product. They don't have a right to compete and sell a product that isn't wanted. So I think it's like a joke. I think they have virtually no chance of suing to overturn this.
Yeah. We got to get out of here. Time is our enemy. Thank you as always. Okay. We'll talk soon.
Okay.
Rob Becker, our legal analyst from New York. When we come back, Christine Brennan will join us. Since we kind of segued into golf, we'll continue that conversation. The Tiger Woods, Sergio Garcia fiasco. How different is this from the Fuzzy Zeller comment of more than a decade ago? Where does this land Sergio Garcia? We'll address those subjects and more. Christine Brennan is next when Primetime continues on The Fan and Sportsnet.
Set your clock radio. It's Brady and Lang in the morning. Tomorrow starting at 5:30 a.m. Now, more of Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
There is a house in New Orleans. They call the rising sun.
14 before the hour, Primetime continues on The Fan and Sportsnet is Canada's most listened to sports talk presentation for this May the 23rd. Later, Pat Gillick, Hall of Famer, Special Advisor to the Phillies, Glenn Healy from Hockey Night in Canada, David Brandt, the President of the CHL and Commissioner of the OHL, on the Memorial Cup, which marches on again tonight, relentlessly marches on. It's win or go home.
Tonight it is.
Starting tonight.
Yeah.
Right?
That's right. Yes, sir. London, Saskatoon.
Meanwhile, we talked about it earlier, this Tiger Woods Sergio Garcia thing has become reality TV, at least on the Golf Channel. And it is, you know, it's one of those rare opportunities that golf gets to become part of the general conversation. It almost never happens. But it certainly has with this. Our friend Christine Brennan of USA Today joins us to talk about it. Hello, Christine. How you been?
Hello, Bob. I'm fine and great to be with you. How are you?
Excellent. Thank you so much for asking. This is a flashback.
John as well.
Yes. This is a flashback, and you alluded to it, I know, in the article you wrote, to a number of years ago in the late 90s when Fuzzy Zeller made a comment that was virtually identical and about the same guy, Tiger Woods, following his first victory at the Masters, and the reference was to what Fuzzy thought Tiger would serve at the Champions Dinner the following year. Compare the two. Given the distance and space in time, a decade and a half approximately, is this mitigated in any way by that time?
Fuzzy Zeller's comment certainly was worse, and it went on and on. If we can parse racist comments, which is worse, right? I mean, that's,
I know it's hard.
You know, saying it's bad, and then, you know, badder. You know what I mean? It's not even a word. But you know, so I'm already saying they're both bad. You know, terrible. But Fuzzy Zeller, you know, said I you know, gonna have to tell that boy not to serve fried chicken at the Masters dinner next year, the Champions dinner, and then he kind of walked away, came back, and said her collared greens or whatever they serve. I mean, it was dreadful. So it went on for a while. Sergio is a much younger man. You would hope would be more of the world than, say, Fuzzy Zeller, especially Fuzzy Zeller at that time. You know, keep in mind that at that point, 1997, when Fuzzy Zeller said those infamous and awful words, it had only been 7 years that Augusta National, the host of the Masters, had even had a black male member of the club, Ron Townsend. So that, no excuse for any of this, but at least that places it in the moment and the time. Now, Sergio is a young man born in 1980, a man of the world. Now, he said, just, of course, I'll serve fried chicken. You know, if we have dinner, I'll serve fried chicken. Terrible. But at the very least, it didn't go on and on. But I would say for a younger man from this generation, you know, a fellow who is clearly aware of, I would think, the openness in our world, the conversations we have about many different things, civil rights, gay rights, et cetera, that he would be, and he spends tons of time in the U.S. and on the PGA Tour, even though he's from Spain. So it's depressing that would happen for him, even if maybe the words were not quite as hurtful, and certainly the conversation was not as long as the one with Fuzzy Zeller.
John and I got into a conversation about the context in which it happened, and we are told that it was at a dinner, and it was a lighthearted question that was asked, and it was and basically referencing the rivalry between these two and the incident at TPC of a couple of weeks before. Does the context in which Sergio said it matter, or is it are the words too strong, too obvious to be mitigated?
I think it's the latter, only because he's in the public eye. You know, this isn't, you know, a man or woman who we grab off the street in Saskatoon or Tupelo or, you know, Spokane and say, hey, you know, what would you serve Tiger Woods, right? This is a guy who is in the public eye all the time.
Yeah.
So I sometimes when we talk about these things, I'm sure there's a lot of listeners going, well, I could flinch. I could have this problem. I might slip and say that. Well, with all due respect, you're not in the public eye the way Sergio is. And, for example, I know there's just things I cannot say. I mean, they don't cross my mind, most of them, so therefore I won't say them. You guys know there's things you just cannot say and do.
Of course.
Right? Right. You could say it in your kitchen. You can't say it on your show.
Right.
Sergio knows this. Sergio knows it. And so the fact that it was a goofy question, you know, is you guys going to have dinner? You know, actually, it's kind of funny because they are having this spat, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So how about Sergio said, yeah, I can't wait to take him out at Marion, right? Let's think of the thousand things Sergio could have answered.
Then I know. Well,
I don't give him a pass on that.
Yeah, I understand.
Christine, do you think there's a different level of political correctness between this continent and Europe? Have you ever thought of that?
Yeah, I have a little bit, and there might be, you know, I tend to like to say that it's political correctness is really correctness, you know, because, you know, John, most of the things that we're talking about are things that are just darn right.
Well, I understand that, but I find, I mean, I got to watch what I say here, but I find the Europeans are in many ways a little more polarized than we are. And we tend to be much more homogeneous in North America, from my travels.
Yeah, you know, that might be true. I haven't really, you know, thought of it, but in an anecdotal way, just kind of thinking it through, anecdotes and things that have happened in my life, potentially. And, of course, today, as you guys know, and you may have talked about this, the news is the European PGA Tour chief executive, George O'Grady, was attempting to defend Sergio in an interview on Sky Sports, you know, just today. over there at the tournament, Wentworth, and he said a lot of Garcia's friends are quote unquote colored athletes.
Yeah.
I mean, that one may even be worse. They're both bad. Again, it's hard to compare terrible things.
I just look at
but to John's point.
I just look at all of the racist remarks between fans and athletes, for instance, in the BPL, and the terrible issues that some of the some of the minority athletes have had in Europe in public situations, the throwing of bananas and things like that, which are absolutely disgraceful.
And certainly soccer, FIFA have dealt with that over the years. Absolutely.
Yes,
so that very well could be the case. And again, when you've got a leader like O'Grady, this is the equivalent of Tim Fincham or be the equivalent of David Stern, right? Or Gary Bettman.
Unimaginable that they would say
Can you imagine if Gary Bettman or David Stern said something like that?
Unimaginable.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. We're up against the clock. You know what would be interesting? It'll be interesting to see when these two guys next are in a tournament together. And you know the cameras are going to be on them almost 24 hours a day. Is there a meeting between the two? Does Sergio go out of his way to not only have an apology, but to extend a hand to Tiger Woods? And does he accept it? And what's the response then? Christine, it's always a delight to have you on. We hope it's not so long the next time. Thank you. Christine Brennan of USA Today. Glenn Healy of Hockey Night in Canada. David Branch, president of the CHL, and Hall of Famer Pat Gillick. When Primetime Sports continues, you're listening on the Fan Radio Network, watching on Sportsnet.